You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson joins me, as he does every Friday. We are going to look at the Star Trek sequel, Into Darkness, and also the latest, I love saying, Ryan Gosling vehicle, A Place Beyond the Pines. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Now, because we're talking about Star Trek, and because so many of you wish you lived in Star Trek world, we will get on to the theme, a review of the film in a moment, but I'd like you to put your thinking caps on any film that you really wish you'd spend the rest of your days in. You might have seen Purple Rose of Cairo, the great Woody Allen classic, where they step into the silver screen. But 1300-222-774, the film you'd love to step into. I'll get onto that in a moment. I'm going to tell you, too, about the syndrome they called the Avatar Blues. I'll get onto that, the depression people felt when they realized they walked out of Avatar and realized they weren't going to stay in that world forever. But before we do any of that, let's have a little listen to the film that both Josh and I have seen, Star Trek Into Darkness. Have a listen to the trailer.
This could just be the beginning.
Beginning of what?
All-out war. I request permission to go after him. I cannot allow you to do this.
Jim, you're not actually going after this guy, are you?
Let's go get this son of a bitch.
Ooh, lots of gruff declarations and serious close-ups and pans and beautiful futuristic technology. Josh, Star Trek Into Darkness, set it up for me and tell me what you think.
Well, in a word, I think it's fun. How's that for a setup? Yep. Look, it is a sequel to the reboot that was kickstarted by J.J. Abrams a few years ago. I really enjoyed the first one at the time, and I'd almost forgotten it by the time this one rolled around. So I rewatched it, and look, I think some of the issues I had with it, the first one, on a first viewing, were more pronounced on a second viewing, and that was it spends half the narrative setting up the characters, you know, sort of the origin story, I guess. And then the villain subplot involving Eric Bana almost becomes a kind of an afterthought, and it sort of rushes to its conclusion. This one doesn't struggle from those issues as much, and that's nice because they've got a great villain here played by Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm going to be careful not to reveal the nature of the villain.
But we like Benedict Cumberbatch. He's good.
We love Benedict Cumberbatch. In fact, we wish Benedict Cumberbatch was in this film a little bit more.
You might know from the Sherlock flicks, so the rebooted Sherlock that's been on Channel 9, the BBC reboot with, what's his name?
Martin Freeman, from The Office.
So Benedict Cumberbatch is great, but continue.
Look, so this one, it doesn't feel the need to provide the origin stories. It's already been set up, all the inter-conflicts on board the ship, particularly the Spock-Kirk rivalry. And this one really is another one of those popular culture films in the shadow of 9/11, because the inciting event for this film is that there's a massive terrorist attack on London, on the Starfleet secret Section 31. And it becomes a hunt for the villain played by Cumberbatch, and it raises all those questions we've seen in other popular culture. You know, how far will you go to it to kill one man?
Allusions to drone technology and targeting someone without a trial.
It's not. I think the whole notion of the 9/11 subject is past us. I think it's all 9/11 text now. There's no real subtlety in which these themes are being dealt with, and it's kind of strange because we're 12 years on. And if anything, the instances of these films are becoming more and more regular. This, particularly hot on the heels of Iron Man 3, was pretty much the same kind of narrative. Just on a really simplistic level, this is also enjoyable. It's fun. It's a visual spectacle feast. It's the kind of mainstay of action cinema these days, the IMAX sort of experience. What saves this from a pretty weak script, I've got to say, and the scriptwriters Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman have amongst their various credits Transformers 1 and 2, which I think speaks volumes.
Yeah, the script's not superb. But there's a few plot holes, too.
Of plot holes, but it's saved by a really joyous cast, and the cast are having fun. There's a lot of energy. Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto are nice as Kirk and Spock. There's some great supporting actors, particularly Carl Urban. Simon Pegg is always sort of good value for a comic. And I think the energy with which the cast embrace their roles and the kind of the rivalry amongst them is really what saves this film, I think.
They've actually been quite a light touch to it. It's not what's the word for it? Ominous, and it's not like they pronounce the words as though they're in a Shakespearean play. I mean, they look like they're having fun, don't they?
Yeah, this is the difference from, I guess, the Christopher Nolan approach to popular culture.
Yeah.
It's a very self-knowing, it's very knowing of its fan base. There's lots of winks there for the Kirk and Spock, the homoerotic subtext between the two of them.
There's a very incredibly chaste kiss.
Oh, yes.
It's all a bit bizarre, actually, the subtext there around people's sexuality, but anyway.
And even the homage to previous action films, the opening sequence of this film is pretty much stolen from the opening to Raiders of the Lost Ark, which, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, is, you know, stolen shot for shot from any number of other sort of 30s serialized films of the day. So, look, it is fun. I think it works if you go into it expecting minimal plot and minimal exposition.
It's beautiful. It looks good.
And it really is a number of stage set pieces after the other, interspersed with minimal plot development. But I think in the contrast to Iron Man 3, which I was pretty underwhelmed by, there's something about the action here and the way they're orchestrated that kept my attention. Yeah. I was kind of enthralled watching
it's the second and not the third, that's why.
Well, yeah, I know.
That's the main reason.
And, of course, you can guarantee there's going to be a third.
Yeah, of course. Is it practice for the Star Wars films, do you think? Do you look at a film like that and think he's trying out acting and script and techniques in preparation for his role with the seventh Star Wars film?
It's going to be interesting. And in fact, even the very idea of choosing someone at the helm of Star Trek, given the rivalry with Star Wars to then helm, you know, the other franchise. Look, compared to Lucas's films, there's enough character drama in here to suggest that there may be a bit of a better balance than Lucas managed with those prequels.
Yeah, your average Telstra ad's better than the Star Wars films. Anyway, not that I'm saying anything about Star Wars films. Now, look, many of you texting in about the film world you'd like to live in. I mentioned The Purple Rose of Cairo, and someone's texted this in. Yes, Purple Rose of Cairo. I love the concept and named my daughter Cecilia. I'm now waiting for the magic to happen. Good luck. Someone wants to be in Wayne's World. That's Peyton Monbunk. Really? In Wayne's World? 1300-222-774. Given that so many people are such big Star Trek fans, I want you to think about the world, the silver screen world you'd love to step into. Easy one, Raph, I like this text. Groundhog Day, I'd be immortal. To Live and Let Die, Bond, The Great World of Music and Video. And actually wants to live in that Roger Moore 70s world. And we need to have a conversation. That's interesting. someone wants to be in either Notting Hill or The Spy Who Loved Me. Quite a few people wanting to be in the James Bond world. I wouldn't have expected that.
And Roger Moore as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to be in a James Bond film, surely you'd want to step into Sean Connery or even Daniel Craig. Someone wants to be in Travels with My Aunt, a great movie. That's from Deb in Toorak. Look, 1300-222-774, I want you to persuade me. You've got a movie fantasy you'd like to spend the rest of your days in. Raph, I'd choose Willy Wonka, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or The Beach, Lollies or Paradise. That's from Novak. So I take it you mean the Danny Boyle book of the film. Wow. 1300-222-774 is the phone number. Have you got one, Josh? A movie world you'd like to...
I was just pondering that. I'd have to choose between two. If it was going to be a dystopic future, it'd have to be Blade Runner. It taps into my kind of angsty, modernist, alienated urban existence self. Or The Wild West. Bring it on. I'm
really
sure it would be awful, and it's everything I'm not. But that whole idea of the individualist, machismo, gunfighter.
I don't know that I could... I was really struggling to come up with any movie world that I would enjoy. Look, 1300-222-774, before we get on to Ryan Gosling, although one thing I wanted to mention about Star Trek, which occurred to me, I love the fact they're still wearing the same colour clothes. You know, Kirk's still got the poo brown shirt and Spock's still got the blue, and I thought, that's kind of cute, you know, that decades later they've still got that going.
Oh, the main thing about the colour is the red shirts. You know the whole thing about the red shirts?
No.
Well, the red shirts are always the disposable people. If you wear a red shirt, you're in trouble.
Oh, really? Right, okay.
So they make that joke in the first film, and then in the second one, one of the characters has to change the colour of his shirt, and the look on his... There's an extended close-up look on his face as if to say...
I didn't get that joke at all.
That means I'm in trouble.
And I like Uhura's little earpiece, though it's still... That this bizarre sort of electronic growth out of her ear comes from the Star Trek TV series, and they've sort of paid that little tribute, but it looks very odd. Someone wants to be in the room with a view. Ooh, I can kind of get that. Sue just says anything with Johnny Depp. I reckon there'd be lots of people agreeing with that as a movie future, a silver screen you'd like to step into. And someone else saying Steel Magnolias. Wow, okay.
That's kind of depressing.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to say that, but you see they have good conversation in Steel Magnolias.
So before everyone starts dying.
Well, yeah. Look, one of the reasons that had me thinking about this is I have very strong memories of Avatar coming out of the 3D experience that was Avatar and thinking how bland and drab the real world seemed, because the 3D effect of Avatar was so extraordinarily phenomenal. At least it was in my mind. And I'm still pretty much an Avatar fan. Josh is too highfalutin to enjoy a film as pedestrian as Avatar. Guy has called from Preston. Guy, what's your silver screen dream?
Hi, Raph. Mine would be the little village of Finesse in Local Hero.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, no, that's a good choice. Nice, realistic.
At least we'd still have a red phone box.
Yeah, well, that too. And you'd be nice. You'd be happy. You'd be comfortable. You wouldn't have to live with space blasters or sort of, you know, people coming after you with six shooters. And Joseph's called from Surry Hills with a silver screen fantasy. Hi there, Joseph.
G'day. How you doing, mate?
Where would you like to exist forever?
Casablanca, Rick's Cafe, Casablanca, Ingrid Bergman, Humphrey Bogart, take me there.
Yeah, you'd have to get rid of Humphrey Bogart, though, wouldn't you, to get the girl?
I don't know. Oh, no, Humphrey Bogart didn't get the girl.
That's true. Yes, that's true. So, yeah, very true. Yeah, you could end
up with
it.
Have to get rid of Paul Heinrich.
That's right. Who knows? I just have to have a lot of integrity.
Oh, well, that'd be easy, I'm sure. And Heather has called in as well. Heather, what's yours?
I'd like to live in Hobbiton, so I'd like to be in The Hobbit.
Yeah, my mum's actually been inside the Hobbit house, you know,
that'd
be set.
Fantastic.
Yeah, well, she still raves about it.
Yeah, well, my reasons are I'm not very tall, I've got hairy toes, and I really like my food.
You're there. I got to admit, actually, when I saw The Lord of the Rings, I came close to the sort of excitement that I think I had as a child when I saw Star Wars, so I can really sympathise with that. Look, thank you, Heather. 1300 222 774. Someone's texted in Brazil. You couldn't possibly want to be in Terry Gilliam's film Brazil. That's a nightmare. That's like saying you want to live in the road or something.
We're pretty much in Brazil now, aren't we?
Oh, Josh, you've got a dim view of the modern world.
Kafkaesque bureaucracy gone mad.
Oh, my Lord. 1300 222 774 is the talkback number. Josh's Twitter tag and website are Filmology, so Filmology with a PH. It's 4:45 on 774 ABC Melbourne. You're with me, Raphael Epstein. We've spoken about Star Trek Into Darkness. It's possibly impossible to avoid that film if you go to any multiplex in the known universe right now. But Ryan Gosling is in a new film as well. So before I get to more of the film fantasy worlds you'd like to live in, tell me about Ryan Gosling's latest, Josh.
Ryan, oh my Gosling. This is a film called Place Beyond the Pines. This has in contrast to Star Trek, which is everywhere, this is a more limited release film from director Derek Cianfrance, or France, I'm not sure how you pronounce the surname, who directed a really remarkable film 3 years ago called Blue Valentine, which was the film that you didn't want to take your partner to because it was almost guaranteed to end in tears.
Right.
It was a film that starred Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams, and it's about a couple's sort of break up interspersed with how they got together. Really, really clever, intelligent filmmaking, and both performances just outstanding. So Blue Valentine's one to look out for in the video store. So this is his follow-up, and again, stars Ryan Gosling, and it's a curious film, and it's quite an ambitious follow-up in many ways. We talk about acts in cinema and structure. This is a really clearly defined three-act structure, but not in the traditional sense. It follows Ryan Gosling, who's a motorbike stunt rider for a traveling sideshow, and he turns up in town and reacquaints himself with an ex-flame and finds out that he has a child, and basically starts to rob banks in order to sort of fund this child's future.
Oh, yeah, he kind of looks to be like trailer trash in the
covered with tattoos, including one that's his heartthrob underneath his chin. And his partner, Eva Mendes, they sort of start this relationship.
I love Eva Mendes.
But really the kind of key turning point in the film, at least the first act, is he bumps into Bradley Cooper, who also gives a great performance in this film. And it's about, I guess it's the interrelationship or the conflicts that resonate after their chance meeting.
Hangover and Silver Linings Playbook, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
So Josh Nelson, in A Place Beyond the Pines, Ryan Gosling is doing bad things. He's running to Bradley Cooper. What happens next?
He's doing bad things, but in a very sexy manner.
Right.
You can tell I'm a bit of a fan of the Gosling. Really don't want to talk too much about the plot of this film. One of the joys, I think, is going in not knowing too much. It's an ambitious film because of the structure, and it's quite an epic scale in terms of dealing with Gosling's character, Bradley Cooper's character, and then in the third act, separate characters that are sort of the combination of those two narrative threads. So it's a really demanding film.
Is it back and forth in time sort of complexity?
No, it's chronological, right, but it takes leaps forward in the narrative, and that's what gives it almost an epic sensibility, despite the fact it's not an epic in terms of its grand narrative. But a really interpersonal drama. And look, there's some great supporting cast members here too, including Ray Liotta and Ben Mendelsohn,
right,
who gives a performance almost really similar to the one he gave in Killing Them Softly.
And he's really revolting in this role?
Well, he's not as... I mean, in Killing Them Softly, he's a grimy sort of crack addict, but here he's a sort of a rural car mechanic who starts assisting Gosling on the robberies. And it's funny in terms of those two actors and the comparisons between Killing Them Softly, because while that film had a really strong or a really overt political subtext in terms of the global financial crisis and the criminal underworld. This one does as well, but it's far more underplayed. And I think maybe that's what Gianfranche is getting at here, amidst a sort of a surface narrative between fathers and sons and generational conflict. And I guess, you know, those sort of grand themes of the fate and destiny and mistakes or sins that one generation makes and how the younger generations are.
So is it about the American underclass? Is it small p political in that sense?
It doesn't generalize in that sense, but I think I think where this film is really remarkable and where it works, even though I found the end slightly unsatisfying, is the way it takes an ambiguous stance towards morality and ethics and its characters. It really it doesn't cast judgments on its characters, which I think is tough to do when you're dealing with particularly sort of lower working class characters. Ryan Gosling's character in this film really reminded me of his character in Drive, another really remarkable film, where he was a stunt rider, a mechanic, and also has this strange sensibility, which I think is really recommends him as an actor. He can play an incredibly sensitive character, but prone to these sort of eruptions of violence, which
and
he does here.
So is this against type for Gosling, or just I'm wondering with all the tats and...
Well, to a degree. I mean, it's similar to the character in Drive, but it's worlds away from characters like the ones he played in Lars and the Real Girl and those sort of characters. I think he's a really remarkable actor.
So A Place Beyond the Pines, Ryan Gosling, Eva Mendes, even a mention, a spot for Ben Mendelsohn as well. Josh Nelson, thank you very much for coming in.
Pleasure.
Josh's film blog you can see at filmology.com or .org, I can't remember now.
It's .com.
With a PH, of course. You can follow him on Twitter, @filmology as well.